Let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the 2008 NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go.
It's Wednesday inside Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com radio. I'm John Rook. We're at the home headquarters today, as we try to do on Wednesdays. I'll be honest, though, as Eric Scalavino is going to join us for a little bit here from Patriots Football Weekly, the opening part of the program. I have to be honest, Eric, the main reason that I come home and do the show from my studio at home on Wednesday is because somebody's got to take care of the puppy.
Oh, I don't blame you for that at all. What kind of dog do you have? I didn't know you had a dog.
I have a 4-month-old chocolate Labrador.
Oh, that I used to have a chocolate lab, too.
And I got to tell you, if you don't watch every move she makes, the house is destroyed. she's actually down here with me in my studio right now.
She got the headphones on?
She doesn't have headphones on, but she does have the bone, you know, the whole bone where she tries to get the marrow out of the bone. Exactly. And so I'm keeping my distance, but she's totally happy when she has that to work on, and it keeps her occupied, and everybody else can go on about their lives. So anybody who has had a puppy or has a puppy at home, you know whence I speak.
I would love to have you bring her into the studio for a show. John, that'd be great. I'd love to have a pet running around.
You can draw her.
Yeah. I know. No, I'd just love to have a pet running around here. It'd be great.
Well, it would be. Believe me, she would do plenty of running.
And what's her name?
Ginger.
Oh, that's great.
Ginger. Yeah. That's
good luck.
Correct.
Good luck with her, John.
Oh, hey, well, listen, we're going to need it. Trust me. You know, it's been 14 years since I've had a baby of any kind. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And so I can't even remember the last time before this I had a baby puppy. So it's been a long time. It's a little bit of a challenge, put it that way. All right, let's get to some business at hand. I know you were out at practice earlier today, and I know you gave the guys the rundown a little bit earlier, but for those that might be just tuning in, what's the latest under the dome today?
Well, we had some good news in that yesterday there were 4 players missing, and among them was Richard Seymour. But he was back today at practice, so that was some good news.
Do we know why he wasn't around yesterday?
No, I speculated that maybe because yesterday was an abnormal day of practice. It's usually their day off on Tuesdays. That maybe some of these guys needed an extra day. Just veteran guys needed maybe some rest. Mm-hmm. So I think it might have just been a coach's decision kind of thing.
You know, that doesn't come as a surprise. I think we've seen that over the last few years from time to time, that it just you know, kind of pick and choose a point. If somebody's a little sore or coaches just kind of recognize that, hey, you know, so-and-so might be sloughing a little bit, you know, give them an extra day off here and there.
Right. So that's just my guess. I don't know anything concrete, but okay. I just had to – that was just my speculation.
Right.
A little bit of bad news is there were still 4 players missing from practice. The 3 others – from yesterday were Adalys Thomas, Eric Alexander, and Lamont Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
Taking Seymour's place on the missing list was Jonathan Wilhite. And I have no idea why he wasn't out there. Didn't see him in the locker room, though, either prior to practice, which is unusual. He's usually one of the guys that's around there. And, you know, because some guys don't necessarily show up to the locker room during open locker room time, but he's one who usually is. So,
right.
Could be that there's something legitimately wrong. Maybe he got, you know, something nicked up yesterday in practice. But we'll find out later today when the participation report comes out in about 2 hours. So.
Right, absolutely.
But, yeah, well, so they were inside. They've been practicing inside. They're scheduled to practice inside all week. I think because it's so cold up here in New England, they're preparing for the warmer weather down south in Florida this weekend. So I think they're staying inside to get acclimated to that.
Are they turning on the heat in the
I think so. When we get there, it's relatively warm, and probably by the time they actually get down to business, it's even warmer. So they were in shells today, so they had the helmets and those tiny little soft pads, and that was about it. So and we only get a few minutes to watch them stretch and maybe do a drill or two, and then we get kicked out. So that's about the extent of what I can tell you, but it's something.
What do you think, and this is part of what I was going to ask those that are listening today in terms of our email question of the day, but you know, obviously, you know, way back in week three, and you get pounded by 25 points, there are obviously several things that kind of stand out. But what I wanted to open up with anyway at the beginning here, webradio@patriots.com is the email address. I realize that maybe that's a game that we all kind of want to put back in the recesses of our minds. But at the same time, there were several significant things that I think happened in that game that could serve as, you know, a drive point or a rallying point or, you know, just some sort of an impetus maybe to do a little bit better this time out. And so I'd be curious to know what stands out most in your mind about that loss to Miami in week three.
Well, it's funny you say that you'd want to put that game as far out of your mind as possible. I would think from a fan's perspective, maybe, but from a player and coach's perspective, I'd want just the opposite. I'd want mm-hmm. them to look at exactly what went wrong and why they went, you know, lost by 25 points and make the corrections. I would want them to be watching so much film this week, and no, undoubtedly they are, to try to figure out what went wrong, how they can fix it, and make sure that it doesn't happen again this weekend. And I think the one that stands out is the one that everyone's been talking about. It's the Wildcat play, because before that game, the Dolphins didn't employ that. It was sort of a brainchild that happened on the flight back from Arizona leading up to the game against New England in week three there. And their quarterback coach, who had some experience with that in college at Arkansas, said, hey, you know what? We haven't been moving the ball. We have a couple of good running backs. We did this in college. Let's just give it a try and see what happens. And it was so successful that you've seen them run it against every team they've played since then.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you may make an argument that it's becoming less and less successful every week for them, and now maybe that they're playing the team that they first had success with it again this weekend. It's pretty interesting, because I highly doubt that New England is going to let themselves be burnt by it the way they were that first time they saw it. Because, let's face it, everyone in the stands, everyone on the sideline, nobody knew it was coming in that first game.
Right. Yeah, that's very true.
The problem was, you know, typically when you see something like that against the Patriots, they're a good team at adjusting. Either at halftime or later in the game or at some point in the game, you see an adjustment and something like that is taken away. It was never taken away in that game. So that's where my concern lies, is can they make enough adjustments this many weeks later against something that they had absolutely no success stopping back then? And now there's enough tape on it from other teams defending it or trying to defend it that I think you're going to see Miami at least try to do it again, but I think you'll see the Patriots have better luck defending it.
Well, to get back to the original question, at least, Wildcat offense, or at least the emergence of the Wildcat offense, running you know, the direct snap route, certainly is a standout memory, I think, for a lot of people. So let me throw this out right off the top. Webradio@patriots.com. What do you remember most about that win for Miami? Do you remember the Wildcat plays? Do you remember the fact that Joey Porter had four sacks in that game and obviously mouthed off beforehand?
Yeah, he got an extra one after the game.
Yes, yeah, he sure did.
In the stat sheet, anyway.
I'll tell you what I remember most about that is the fact that it was just a 25-point loss at home. I mean, that stands out like a sore thumb to me. And obviously it was also Tony Sperano, their first-year head coach. It was his first win.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably lost in the shuffle of everything. But, you know, among those items, what stands out most to you? Is there something that I missed about that 38-13 loss back in week three that still stands out to you? So I'd like to hear your thoughts. Webradio@patriots.com is how you send us the answers to that today. Wildcat, yeah, but I just, the fact that the Patriots got spanked, Eric, I have a real hard time. You know, you're talking about a team that's only lost, 10 games in the history of this stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And to lose like that to a team that won all of one game last season, mm-hmm. is just remarkable. Now, I think we all realize that Miami was better than a one-win team last year. And they're probably not as good as, you know, the six wins that they have right now. I'm sure somewhere the answer's in the middle. Fact is, though, is that they're riding some real momentum now. And I think mm-hmm. we all know that, you know, in the National Football League, momentum is a funny thing. And guys try to ride it for as long as they can. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it can work. It really does, because this is a league full of parity from top to bottom.
It sure is. It's funny, what stands out to me a little bit is the fact that the last time they had lost a regular season game was to Miami going into that game.
Right.
And,
that's right.
And, you know, the Super Bowl aside, I'm just talking regular season here. You kind of had to, you almost, I don't want to say, none of us saw it coming, of course, but it's just ironic that they have historically had so much bad luck against the Dolphins, whether it's up here or down in Miami. And you just kind of knew that, that regular season win streak was going to come to an end at some point. And it's almost fitting that it happened to happen against the Dolphins.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sort of a bizarre bookend to that streak, you know. That 21-0 debacle down in Miami, I think it was in 06. Oh, it had to be 06. It wasn't 07.
Right.
But that was an atrocious game for the Pats. And then the next time they have an atrocious game, it's against that same organization, different players, of course, but it's just to me that's the weird thing. It's how some franchises, coaches and players can change, but the organizations themselves have trouble with certain other organizations, and the Dolphins are one of those.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about that yesterday after you left. I mean, the fact is that the Patriots have traditionally always had problems playing down in Miami, and now that you've got, you know, extra pressure on your shoulders for this game because of the obvious reasons. I mean, you can't afford to go 0-2 to these guys. You can't afford a third loss in the division. Otherwise, you're going to lose just about every tiebreaker there would be in terms of a wild card spot. You're going to fall a good solid two games behind the Dolphins, really, over all practical purposes, in the standings if you lose this game, and so you're clearly climbing. It's going to be an uphill battle where you probably would have to win out. If you lose this game, you'd probably have to win the final six games of the regular season to even have a shot.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of, you know, corner that you'd back yourself into. The Patriots will back themselves into if they lose this game. So it's pretty easy to see, you know, where the importance lies here. The other thing I talked a little bit about yesterday, though, that I kind of, you know, wanted to open up with today is the fact that I asked fans at the end of the show yesterday to sort of consider where this team has come and where they currently are. And in all honesty, are you surprised? Are you pleased? Are you disappointed with where this team is? And again, I'm really kind of trying to take the whole picture, you know, into perspective here because of, you know, the injuries, but obviously there are expectations. We talk so much about, you know, the depth that this organization has, and yet some of it has certainly come through on the offensive side, less so on the defensive side. And so I'm wondering where the feeling lies, especially in light of the fact that you're in basically a playoff life battle this weekend with Miami. If largely you're surprised in a positive sense or in a negative sense about this team, you know, through 10 games. And that's something I hope that we'll also get some response to today. But in your estimation, do you find yourself surprised positively or negatively about this team being 6-4?
That's a good question. I wasn't really sure what to expect when Brady went down and Castle came in, because none of us really had ever seen the kid play in any meaningful games. And he would have the entire season to do that once Brady went down. I really didn't know. I really could have foreseen two things. I could have seen them just completely tanking and going, you know, worst case, below 500, and missing the playoffs. And best case scenario, them doing exactly what they've been doing, which is to win and to stay in the playoff hunt and possibly get even a 1 or 2 seed and get a first round bye. I think it's entirely possible. I thought because of their defense at the beginning of the year, I thought that their front seven was going to be a strength and was going to carry them. And we were going to see a lot of low scoring type contests, kind of like back in 2001, where it came down to the end a lot and there wasn't really a lot of scoring. I'm a little surprised that it's just the opposite. Castle and the offense are having no trouble putting points on the board for the most part. And the defense, the front seven in particular, are not really living up to the type of expectations that I had for them, which was to be a dominant group. Gerard Mayo aside, of course.
Yeah.
But I'm also pleasantly surprised that so many of the rookies who are playing at a decent level. I'm tempered, though, by the poor tackling I've seen and the soft over the middle gains that they're giving up to a lot of teams. The Dolphins were one of them. The Jets were another one for a while there. So I'm at about even. It's kind of a wash, John, where what my expectations were and how they're being met, because I'm optimistic about some things and I'm very pessimistic and disappointed about some others.
Well, here's where I stand, and I think that I'd have to agree with you, but just for the sake of argument here, I'll pick one side over the other. I'd have to say that largely I'm disappointed, and the reason that I'm disappointed, and again, I'm taking into consideration all of the injuries, of which, of course, there have been some significant ones, and we obviously know what those are at this stage of the game. But I am disappointed because, and I think it's mostly because of what I've seen as a deficiency on the defensive side of the football. I expected this Patriots defense to be a better defensive team than it has portrayed itself to this point in time. Now, you know, I realize they've lost Rodney Harrison. I realize they've lost Dalis Thomas. I realize they've lost a little bit of time, you know, on the front four as well. They lost Jarvis Green for a little bit of time. And, you know, obviously Tank Williams was expected to be a, you know, big factor here, and they didn't even get him onto the field this year. So, you know, I understand all of that. But I expected, I think, more, and I'm not even sure if this is the right word, but I expected more cohesion. I expected more, you know, upfield, you know, penetration by guys mm-hmm. like Seymour and
yep.
Warren.
Yep.
I expected Mike Vrabel to continue to wreak havoc off the end, you know, like he did toward the tail end of last year that we really haven't seen.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I knew going in that the corners were going to be, you know, the Achilles heel here. And frankly, in a sort of a warped way, I'm almost, you know, I don't want to say
pleasantly
pleased.
Surprised.
No, but I'm not surprised by the way that the corners have played. They've at least held their own most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
They have been beaten, but again, we expected, I think, less from the defensive backs than we expected from the front seven. Does that make any sense?
Yes, absolutely. The defensive backs have gotten significantly better since that San Diego game when they let all those big plays go. I'm not sure exactly what they did to change that, but it seems like they haven't been letting themselves get beaten that badly in games. And right. considering the injuries and the shuffling that's had to take place because of that, I am a little surprised at how well that they've held up. They lost Terrence Wheatley again this week, so that's a little bit of depth that they're not going to have anymore, and they haven't really filled that spot, so they're really thinner than they were even a week or two ago
mm-hmm.
at that spot. But they're finding a way to get it done. It kind of reminds me of, I think it was 03 or 04 when they went to the Super Bowl, and they did it with Don Davis filling in at safety.
Right, right, yeah.
They had
right,
so
yeah.
many injuries that they were really, you didn't know who, they were picking guys up off the street week to week to play corner that year. So it reminds me a little bit of that, not quite as bad, but they're finding a way to get it done, and you're right, it's the inverse. I expected that out of the front seven and not the defensive backs, and it's the opposite, and I'm disappointed in the front seven, but surprised and, you know, a little bit optimistic about what I've seen from the D-backs, especially when there are so many of the young guys in there.
Right.
That it gives me hope that down the road that they'll be better off as a result of having had to play all this.
Well, that's a question, of course, that I want to pose to the listeners here today. So, you know, number one, surprise in a disappointed or in a positive sense about some facet of the football team, offensively or defensively. I think that's, you know, what we've covered there. Number one. Number two, what's most memorable about the Patriots losing back in week three to Miami? The one specific thing that stands out the most in your mind about that game at Foxborough. And number three, the other thing I wanted to talk about tonight was something that you guys were talking about, we were talking about right at the end of PFW, is the overtime story.
Oh, yeah.
And whether or not you have a solution, a viable, workable solution in your own mind to solve overtime in the NFL, because clearly it's too difficult for guys like Donovan McNabb to remember.
I mean, that I'm still astounded by that. I mean, at this level, John, I there's no excuse for not knowing something as basic as that. You know, we talked about at the tail end of our show from noon to two about how if it's an arcane rule like the, you know,
right,
the
right.
illegal forward pass, fine. It's something like that never gets called. You're not expected to know silly things like that. But something as basic as whether you win, lose, or tie a game, I mean, that's Pop Warner. That's 101.
Sure.
You're supposed to know those things.
Yeah, you would. I mean, like, you know, 10 yards for a first down, you'd think, hey, you know, overtime, all right, you know, first team to score wins. I mean, that's,
How long have you been playing this game? Don't the coaches prepare your team for your 2-minute drill at the end of a game?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just don't know how that one escapes them, to be quite honest with you.
But as far as the overtime goes, I like your idea, John. Play a full quarter.
Play a full quarter, and then who's left standing?
Who's left
standing? If it's still tied,
then fine.
Then it's a tie.
Right. I'm fine with that. I like that idea.
Yeah. I mean, to me, that seemed to be the most fair and equitable way. Everybody's guaranteed a possession, if you will. Mm-hmm. You can still play it to where your regular football 60-minute strategies come into play, mm-hmm. you know, with field position and kicking game and punting and pinning someone deep and yada, yada. Nothing changes in terms of football strategy if you just play a fifth quarter. That's it.
And from a fan's perspective, you get an extra 45 minutes or so of football.
Pretty much. The only, you know, as I think it was brought out, I think the only people who would probably gripe about that would be TV. But frankly, you know what? Hey, you know, they're paying the freight, so what? So we push 60 minutes back a little bit. Mm. I mean, really, who cares?
Yeah, and you're not losing viewership. I mean,
no, you're not losing. No, absolutely. That's the bottom line. They would not be losing viewership. In fact, I'd argue you might have better viewership simply because the interested people would be riveted to the game to find out who the heck's going to win.
Exactly.
You know, so. All right, Eric, I appreciate your hanging around today, and we'll talk again tomorrow.
No problem, man. Good luck with that puppy.
Gotta. I need it. Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly. He'll rejoin us for a bit in tomorrow's show as well. All right, so there you go. You've got your topics of the day to talk about. Number one, yet again, what's most disappointing or pleasing to you about the Patriots right now being at 6-4, you know, after 10 games, 11 weeks into the season? That's number one. Number two, what do you remember most about that loss to Miami back in week 3? And number three, do you have a solution for overtime in the NFL? All right, hopefully that's something for everybody today. Chew on those questions. Fire off your emails, webradio@patriots.com, and we're going to get to your answers. But we're going to take a time out here because in just a couple of moments, Dan Dierdorf, the former All-Pro offensive lineman and current CBS analyst, he'll be a part of the broadcast team on Sunday in Miami with Greg Gumbel. Dan Dierdorf will join us coming up next right here inside the Playbook.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar,
the hot nacho bar,
the hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
But we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is the ultimate shopping, dining, and entertainment destination in New England. What's your Patriot Place experience?
We took the kids to a movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe and finally went to Red Robin. The burgers were amazing. It was so much fun. Everyone loved it.
We had girls' night out at Patriot Place last weekend. A little shopping, dinner at Davio's. It's just like the one in Boston. And we had drinks at the cutest little wine bar called Tastings.
Experience Patriot Place. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day.
Honestly, I'm here about once a week. I always find great deals at Christmas Tree Shop and Old Navy, and the shoes at Off-Broadway are unbelievable.
Patriot Place is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough with convenient and free parking.
Bass Pro Shop and Eastern Mountain Sports have everything I need for my camping and hiking trips. And we love CBS Scene Restaurant. They've kind of got a million TVs, and their outdoor deck looks right into Gillette Stadium. It's so cool.
Log on to patriot-place.com for more information. Patriot Place. Everyone wins.
We know you have a busy day ahead of you, and mornings are always tough to get through. So stop by your local Dunkin' Donuts today and grab a freshly ground, freshly brewed Dunkin' Donuts coffee. It's the perfect thing to get you going in the morning. Dunkin' Donuts coffee is made with real Arabica beans, which give it that rich flavor everybody loves. And while you're there, Try the new Egg White Flatbread Sandwich from the new DD Smart Menu. Choose from two delicious varieties, turkey sausage or veggie. Both served on multi-grain bread. With under 300 calories, you can now make a smarter choice for breakfast. So, stop into your local Dunkin' Donuts today and try one with a medium hot coffee for only $3.99. Price and participation may vary, plus applicable taxes. Limited time offer.
When you got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Back inside the playbook here for a Wednesday, I'm John Rook, and as is usually the case, not everybody is where they need to be at this point in time, so we'll keep working on Dan Dierdorf. We try to get this stuff set up. Dan's done a pretty good job of communicating with the CBS folks to have Mr. Dierdorf available to talk to you today and to talk to all of us today, and we will hook up with him shortly. So in the meantime, let's keep those emails humming, shall we? Webradio@patriots.com is the email address, webradio@patriots.com. A lot to talk about today. Most memorable about the loss to Miami back in week three. Because frankly, we were all shocked. All of us, every one of us. And Frank, I would argue that Miami fans were as shocked in the other direction. I mean, they might have hope to win this game, you think? I mean, going in, they were 0-2. They were 1 and what were they? 15? Yeah, that's how many losses last year. 1 and 15 last year. They were 0-2 to start the year. New regime, new head coach, and to throw a shocker like that on everybody, I mean, that stunned the entire National Football League. And because it was so significant, I mean, that was a seismic quake, I believe. And it has resonated to the point where this team, since that point in time, since that 0-2 start, they've won 6 of 8 games. Now, have they won anything terribly impressively? Well, no, not overwhelmingly, but they've managed to play well enough to win. And so the Dolphins are hugely a byproduct of the scheduling system. Fact is, they finished in dead last place, so the teams that, they finished in last place in comparable divisions that they played in, that's who's going to be on their schedule this year. And I think we all realize, as I said earlier, that this team was not as bad as 1-15 a year ago. We certainly learned that back in week three. They may not be as good as, 6 of their last 8 in terms of the win column either. Probably somewhere in the middle, maybe erring toward the side of being pretty good. But are they really a contending team? This week is going to tell that, all right? If they can beat the Patriots again, and yes, I know it's at home, but if they can sweep the Patriots, then you'd have to say that Miami is a true contender. Miami has arrived back onto the scene, and Miami is ready to compete for not only a division, but certainly into the playoffs. I don't know that the Patriots are dead completely as far as a playoff team. But as I said yesterday, I will go on record here right now and tell you that if the Patriots do not win this game, I do not believe they will make the playoffs this year. That's how important this game is to the Patriots' chances of getting in. Now, of course, I could be wrong because, yes, as I suggested to Eric just a couple of moments ago, this team could rip off, if they lost to Miami, they could conceivably rip off 6 straight wins, finish 11-5, and probably at 11-5, I'm going to guess that that's going to, at the very minimum, get them a wild card spot, if not a division championship at 11-5. Because the way, New York is playing, the way Miami's playing, I don't see either one of those teams finishing with, right now with 4 losses. Now, of course, the case may be if they all finished 11-5 together, because I'm not sure. Does New York play Miami again? They may. I haven't looked at the schedule close enough. Then you're going to lose out on any kind of tiebreaker. But let's face it, it does serious damage to playoff losses or to playoff chances if they lose this game this weekend. So that's number one. What's most memorable about that loss to Miami back in week three to you? Is it the Wildcat offense that, you know, seemingly the Patriots had no answer for? Is it the fact that, you know, they lost by 25 points total, which totally and completely floored me? That's my most memorable, memory, if you will. Tony Sparano got his first win as Miami coach that day. You know, first win for a new regime, of course, under Bill Parcells running the show there now. And, of course, Joey Porter, you know, his mouth running off at the mouth before the week, he backed it up. Patriots only scored 13 points. He managed four sacks himself during the day. And, of course, Joey's running his mouth off again this week, as we talked a little about yesterday. And I don't know if you saw the quotes, but a couple of the Patriot players, you know, in particular Heath Evans, quoted in a couple of the Florida newspapers today, you know, in the locker room yesterday, basically saying, hey, you know what? Porter's earned the right to talk. They kicked our butts back in week three. He's earned the right. So until we shut him up, he can yap all he wants to. I feel like that's a fairly typical Patriot answer to it, because, you know, most of the time when you ask the Patriots, well, how do you feel about Joey Porter? And you kind of get this cross-eyed look, and it's kind of like, you know, hey, you know, doesn't bother us one way or the other. That's the general consensus. But, you know, Heath Evans, frankly, those are pretty honest comments. And I happen to think he's right. Much as we hate to hear it, much as we hate to hear the mouth that roared and, you know, Porter, you know, flap his gums, he's absolutely 110% correct. They don't like the Patriots. The Patriots don't like them. If he feels like the Patriots disrespected them, a lot of that probably stems from the fact that Porter flapped his gums anyway. But now that the Patriots got their butts kicked back in week three, and he's still flapping his gums, as far as I'm concerned, you know what, Joey? Keep flapping them, baby. Keep going. Because if you're looking at it from a New England perspective here, you want the guy to continue to keep his mouth open until somehow somebody in a silver helmet can stick his foot in his mouth and stop the talking. That's what you want to have happen if you're a Patriot or a Patriot fan. So Heath Evans is absolutely 110% correct. He's earned the right to yap because the Patriots did nothing to shut him up 8 weeks ago. Nothing to shut him up. So that's how you kind of handle the Joey Porter story, I think, overall. You know, a couple of other things as well that we were talking about. Do you have a solution to the overtime problem in light of the, you know, the whole Donovan McNabb, I didn't know what the overtime rule was comments? I mean, you know, as we talked about, I find that a little incredible. But, you know, number one, did you know the overtime rule? Number two, if you did, then how would you fix overtime from what it presently stands? Nobody likes ties. I mean, obviously, that 13-13 tie on Sunday between the Eagles and the Bengals is the first tie in 6 years in the NFL. So, I mean, you know, my own son, who's almost 14 years old, he's kind of like, Dad, I didn't even know they could tie in the NFL because I had never seen one, you know, consciously remember one. And technically, he's right. I mean, you know, it's been a long time since anybody's seen a tie in the NFL. Nobody likes those. It doesn't solve anything. We play to win, right, Herm Edwards? You play to win the game. So in that regard, you should continue to play. Now, I realize in the regular season, you got to put some kind of a finite end to it all. And so really, the way to get this thing done here is very simple. In my own opinion, play the fifth quarter. Play it out. Let them go. That way, you know, you don't have to, you know, feel like a team is going to win if they win the coin flip in overtime, which is, of course, what happened to the Patriots this last week in the overtime loss to the Jets. Now, certainly you put all the blame on that one on the defense because it's up to the defense to stop New York, and they had him in the third, you know, and 15, and they get 16 yards deep in their own end of the field, and I realize that's, you know, revisited territory here. You know, we talked about that yesterday and probably serves little purpose to talk about it more right now, but the fact is the Patriots defense could have stood up, should have stood up, and they did not. And so I could see where someone might say, well, you know what, why bail out a defense? If they can't stop them, then the first team to score should win. Well, what this does, though, is it evens out the proposition. In other words, all right, let's say you're just incredibly unlucky and you never win a toss. Well, you know you're going to get the football, generally speaking, at least once. You know, I mean, it would be a pretty unbelievable occurrence to have a 15-minute drive, would it? Wouldn't it not? I mean, is it conceivable? I suppose it's possible, but I'd say that would be one of the rarest things I've ever seen. I don't even know what the longest drive from start to finish in NFL history might be. I'm sure somebody can dig that info up and send it over today via email, if we even have, you know, a statistic on that. I'm sure the Elias Sports Bureau would probably know that one. Typical long drive, you know, being 80, 90-plus yards is usually in the, you know, 9-minute range. Suffice to say, if you play a full quarter, no matter how much a team has dominated you offensively and your defense just can't get them off the field, you're going to get the football and a chance to at least even the score. It seems to be the most fair and equitable way to solve the problem, in my opinion, because, number one, everybody's going to get a chance to score. Number two, you can play with absolutely regular time strategies in football. You can play field position. You know, it takes nothing away, because in overtime now, you know, certainly there's more of a sense of urgency to stop somebody in that opening drive because you might not ever get the football. And for those that, you know, might propose the collegiate way of answering things, well, you know, I mean, you start at the 25-yard line and, you know, that's just, you know, it takes a lot of the game of football out of it. It takes a lot of the strategy away. You know, it's like playing arena ball. And I don't think anybody really wants to see that either. In fact, I understand why colleges have their rule, because, you know, I'm sure there's an injury factor. And plus, you know, it's more of an entertainment factor, I think, more of rah-rah, you know, in the college game. And that's fine. It works for them. That's great. But I don't think the NFL should necessarily subscribe to that theory. And plus, we all know, you know, college students have to get back and study, right? That's fine. College is, it's okay. They can keep it as it is. At least college took the step in the right direction where we don't have 7 overtimes anymore, that after the second overtime and you score a touchdown, you have to go for 2. All right, that's a step in the right direction. That's fine. You have to convert. You have to be able to execute, and that's good. But in the pro game, you'd have, you know, the execution part of it taken care of. You'd have, you know, field position. The kicking game all comes into play. I mean, just play a fifth quarter, man. Just play it. Play the whole 15 minutes. Even if you score first in overtime, the other team's got a shot. It's still up to your team to stop them. And so it's a mini version of the 60-minute game, complete with a strategy and everything else that comes along with it. That's how you should settle in overtime. Agree or disagree? Webradio@patriots.com is how you get to us. The other thing that, you know, certainly comes into it is the fact that, okay, my dog has just gotten a hold of a pillow and she's just ripping it to shreds. Pardon me. While I, you know, try to figure out a way to tell my wife about that piece, that pillow in particular. Do you know what I'm talking about here? I think I'll just ignore that now. The other thing I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, in addition to the remembrances of the Miami game in Week 3 and the overtime rule, has to do with, for the most part, it has to do with your overall surprise in a positive or negative sense with the Patriots standing at 6-4 after 11 weeks. I mean, if you hear the phrase Tom Brady is down, then naturally your next logical conclusion is going to be the Patriots aren't as good. And so when you take all of that into consideration, are you still pleasantly surprised? I mean, there were so many fans that were ready to jump off the ship after week one because of Brady's injury. We had emailers here. We had talk show callers, both here and, you know, and on EEI and locally, and just saying, oh, the Patriots, they won't win 3. They won't win 4 games all year long. Well, obviously, they've done better than that. They've won 6. So in that regard, are you still surprised in a positive sense? Or, like me, are you surprised in a negative sense because you expected more out of a certain facet of the team, namely the defense? So you got a lot to chew on here. We're still continuing to effort Dan Dierdorf, and hopefully he'll be able to join us in just a little bit. Also, we do have coming up Harvey Green, who's the Senior Vice President of Media Relations for the Miami Dolphins and a frequent contributor, especially on Miami Game Week, to the playbook. And Harvey's going to join us in our 3 o'clock hour today to give us the lowdown from South Florida and how this team looks at the Patriots now coming into Dolphin Stadium this Sunday. So Harvey's going to join us in the 3 o'clock hour, and we'll get some of the Dolphins' perspective for you. The conference calls today with members of the Patriots media belong to Ronnie Brown, of course, who was the the benefactor of that Wildcat offense back in week 3, the running back for the Miami Dolphins and head coach Tony Sparano. And we hope to have both of those for you before the show is completed today. If not, we'll have them for you first thing tomorrow. But that is the game plan anyway for the rest of the program. All right, let's get a couple of emails in here before we get to a timeout. And don't forget, webradio@patriots.com. Really looking for your input here today because I think we've got some good things to chew on, and I would like to hear your opinions, you know, on these particular subjects at this point in time. All right, first and foremost, James in Roanoke Rapids says, I don't think it'll be the end of any chances of the Patriots making the playoffs if they lose another game. Even with the loss last Thursday, I think you saw a glimmer of the real possibility of them winning out. Let's see. They play Miami after having extra time to prepare for them. I say that gives them a real good chance at a win. Then after they play Pittsburgh at home, they have only one team left on the schedule that may have a real chance at beating them, and that's Arizona in Gillette, December the 28th. That's a warm weather team coming to play in a very cold and maybe even snowy New England. Advantage Patriots. So even if they do lose one more, do you really think they can't make the playoffs with an 11-5 record? All right. You know, James, you bring up very good points, and I think I did touch on that just a little bit. If they did lose this Sunday and they did go 6-0 at 11-5, would they get in? Probably. But it's not guaranteed. It depends on what the Jets and the Dolphins do. Keep in mind now, you know, you're even with the Jets, and you're going to actually probably be behind the Jets because they would probably finish better than 3-3 in the division. And that's the best the Patriots could do if they lose. You're going to be 2 games behind the Dolphins. So if unless the Dolphins are 10-6, you lose a tiebreaker with Miami, okay? And if the Dolphins win this weekend, they'll be 7-4. They'd have to finish 10-6, and you have to win out to finish ahead of them. So I'm sure you can see that the deck is kind of stacked against you here a little bit. It's not impossible. It is certainly possible. But I think, you know, it will be very, very difficult. And I'm going on record as saying if the Patriots lose this Sunday, they won't make the playoffs. I do not believe they will. If you couple the fact the Patriots lose this Sunday and the Jets actually beat Tennessee, no shot. No shot, because the Jets are going to win the division. That would be my thought. Is there still football to be played? Yes. Is there still time to rally? Yes. I mean, mathematically speaking, sure, the Jets, you know, if they win this weekend, they would be 8-3. And could they lose 5 in a row? Well, of course they could. Mathematically, it certainly would be possible. So mathematically, no, the Patriots would not be eliminated. I'm aware of that. But for all practical purposes, I think that they would be. If you disagree, feel free to, but that's just kind of how I look at it at this stage of the game. Got another email here. This is from Philip in Nova Scotia, who says, you know, unless we know Brady will not be back, franchising Castle would just be plain stupid. The Pats should spend some smart money on defense. I think the Pats have a good opportunity to build a great defense around Mayo and some of the other younger players. Unless, of course, it looks like Castle will go to the Jets, then give him everything he wants. We did talk a little about this yesterday and whether or not you might put the franchise tag on him. And I know that this has been a topic of conversation amongst many of you, and the PFW guys have tackled this one as well. Look, here's the thing. You're going to have, I believe, we talked a little about the salary cap and not knowing what the number was yesterday. It looked into that a little bit further. And the Patriots are going to have somewhere around $20 million in cap room for this next season. If you signed Castle, if you franchised him, he'd probably come in at about $11 million on that cap. All right, so you've got the cap room, apparently, to be able to handle it if you decide you want to do it. Now, does it take away from some of the other things you want to do? Probably. But what I'm saying here is that, you know, first and foremost, you have to determine whether or not Tom Brady's going to be able to be anywhere close to where he was before the injury. And I think we all realize now that that's not a given. We've seen this happen with quarterbacks and knee injuries, and it does take them at least a year, sometimes two, before they can be their old selves again. And what's Tom Brady's shelf life? 5, 6, 7 years left in the NFL, if we're lucky? Probably. So I think it probably bears at least consideration. And then if you decide to franchise him, don't think for a minute that they're really going to hold on to him, all right? My guess would be if they apply the tag, they're going to try to work a deal. No, I don't think there's going to be somebody who's willing to give them 2 first-round draft picks, but I think you could cut a trade with somebody, and we talked a little about this yesterday as well, but I think you could cut a trade with somebody for potentially a first-round pick. If not a first, then maybe, you know, a second and a third or a combination of something for him. But I think you could probably cut yourself a deal and get something for him. And so, you know, yeah, you'd take the cap hit, but yes, you'd get something for him. So if you're going to lose him, you definitely want to get something out of him. I mean, after all, you put the sweat equity into making Matt Cassel what he is, did you not? Of course you did. So why shouldn't the Patriots get something for that sweat equity you put into, you know, making him a viable entity as a starter in the NFL? You absolutely should. Patriots, if they franchise him, fine. If that's an organizational decision they want to do, that's fine. But get something for him. Work out a deal. And you don't franchise him unless you feel like you've got a deal or two in the wings. And preferably you have a couple of deals, because that way then you get two teams playing off of each other desperate to go after a guy like Cassel. San Francisco comes to mind. I mean, if it's the Jets, okay. Then if it's the Jets, let him go. Certainly would add spice again to a rivalry that really doesn't need it, right? Again, my own personal opinion, and I mentioned this yesterday, my own personal opinion is that Favre does not go after this year. And this really, now, the only way that I think Favre actually steps down is if the Jets win the Super Bowl, then I think he might step aside and go out the winner. I think that's the only shot that Favre has to stick into his guns and retiring. That's the only shot. Otherwise, I think he comes back at least for one more. I mean, that kind of makes sense, doesn't it? Of course it does. So I think going to the Jets, I think it's kind of a moot point. I don't think the Jets are going to be in the market for somebody, not this next year. I think you're going to have to look elsewhere for another team. You know, potentially look for a quarterback, and that's who the Patriots could potentially deal with if they decide to franchise Cassel. So that's what we're looking for. Yes, I totally agree, Philip. You've got an opportunity to build, you know, around a guy like Mayo defensively. I would love to see them, you know, go after a guy. You know, obviously I'm partial to a guy like Brian Arakpo from Texas, who has, you know, got speed personified on the end. You know, he's a big dude. He's 260 pounds. But then again, you know, Dallas Thomas is a big dude also. You know, could you make him an outside linebacker in a 3-4 scheme? I think you probably could, especially after you get a closer look at him in the combines, right? I think what you're looking for, though, and if he's not available, you know, when the Patriots are picking, you're looking for, I think, somebody who's got some speed, because what are the knocks on the Patriots' defense? What do you hear other teams saying? What did the Jets players say last week going into the game? Patriots are still old and slow. Well, then do something about that. Get younger, get faster. You look for those edge guys. Find the edge guys. Whether they're, you know, defensive ends in college where you could put down an outside linebacker in a 3-4 scheme, or you find someone who is a stand-up, a three-point stand defensive end, you know, one way or the other, you find a way to do that. I think you also realize that they could still use some help in the middle defensively. They're not going to be able to count on Teddy Bruschi that much longer. Maybe not anymore, period. And then defensive backs. I mean, do we even need to go there? We know that there's a definitive need there. I'd be interested to see what might come available in the free agent market, you know, in the offseason, you know, in the secondary. You gotta do something to shore up the cornerback spot. So, I mean, there's a ton of stuff there. I actually think they'll be okay safety-wise. I do, and that's even without Rodney Harrison. I think everybody fully expects Rodney to, you know, retire. But I think they'll be okay at safety. Keep in mind, you know, that you know, Tank Williams still might be an option there. And so I think they'll be fine at safety, or at least potentially better at safety than they are at the corner. But, you know, you got the cornerback spot, and you need to get faster in addition to being younger. I think they're still okay at the tackle spot, even though, you know, at times I don't think anybody's been terribly happy with the way the tackles have operated. But I think potentially they're still okay there. They're still young enough there. I want to see edge guys, and I want to see corners. So I want to see edge in the front seven, and I want to see edge in the backfield. That's what I want to see to improve defensively for next year. Those are glaring, glaring weaknesses. Offensively, a little depth on the offensive line and a running back. Let's face it. That's it. Now, I'm not entirely certain. I'm kind of speaking off the top of my head here based on a couple of things I've read in the past. I think Anquan Boldin is a free agent. I'd love to see the Patriots go after him and put him on one side and Randy Moss on the other. Would you not? That would be every bit as good as, you know, Terrell Owens and Roy Williams at Dallas, which to me I think is a pretty good 1-2 punch, you know, at wide receiver. But I think that would be every bit as good as that. I'd love to see that. I don't know if the Patriots are able to do that, you know, with, you know, the extra cap room they might have, but by all means, that would certainly be a consideration if you're able to, you know, finagle somehow, some way. But, yeah, depth on the offensive line. They can still use a good young lineman, I think, somebody with, you know, a mid-range draft pick, and then they need a running back. They need another running back. I don't think they'll go get the running back. I do believe, as I said yesterday to Eric, I do believe they will give Lawrence Maroney one more year, the final year of his rookie deal, to see if he can't be still that go-to guy. I think you and I both know how that's going to turn out, but I think they'll give him that year. I think it's Chad Jackson time, you know, part two is what I think. But, okay. That's the Patriots' prerogative. After all, he is a first-round draft pick, and you'd have a tendency to let first-round draft picks hang themselves, right, until they just have nothing left, and then you discard, and I think that's what they'll do here. Same thing with Benjamin Watson, as we were talking about yesterday, and how he's been a huge disappointment, and I'm ready to put Watson in that same category with Maroney in terms of being, you know, an underachiever. But the fact is that he's a first-round draft pick, and so, you know, he's going to get every opportunity to keep his job before they discard him, and they consider themselves a failure for having drafted him in the first place. They'll get extra time here with both of those guys. So, but the offense is still in better shape. Anyway, so that was good thought-provoking email, Philip. I appreciate, you know, the comments simply because it kind of gets us off on tangents, doesn't it, from time to time? Let me get another one in here before we take a timeout. This one comes from our friend Todd, who says, you know, the easiest way to fix the overtime would be to give the other team the chance to match or exceed the first possession. If they do, the game is over. If they don't, you continue until the 15 minutes is up. You know, that's the actual suggestion that I hear most often from most people. How do we fix overtime? How do we do this? How do we make it even for both sides? Well, here's how you make it even. All right, let's say, you know, for instance, we'll take last week's game with the Jets in mind here. All right, Jets came down and scored a field goal. All right, and they took, what was it, 9 minutes or whatever it was, 8 minutes off the clock to do that. So the Patriots then would have 7 minutes and change, 6 minutes and change to at least kick a field goal. But if the Patriots score a touchdown in that 6 minutes, they win the game. That makes sense to you? I think that, because that way, you have a chance to keep the game shorter and finish in less than the allotted 15 minutes of time in the overtime. And both teams get a chance with the football. So it's really a modified version of the college game, because in the college game, you start on the 25-yard line, right? And if you kick a field goal, that's great. But if the other team, they get their possession at the same 25-yard line, if they score a touchdown, game's over. But you keep playing if you match them field goal for field goal or touchdown for touchdown. And then after the second overtime, two go rounds complete. If you score a touchdown, you have to go for two. And if you make it, the other team has to score the touchdown and convert the two-point conversion to move into the fourth overtime. And in a sense, this would be an elongated version of that. So you'd probably still play the 15 minutes, but you at least have a chance to keep it shorter than the 15 minutes of allotted time. That actually, Todd, may be the way if they change the rules. And I'm not saying they will. I think they should take a look at it in the offseason. The competition committee should definitely look at it. But if they do change the rules, my guess would be your suggestion would probably be the one that would be most popular. It doesn't mean they're going to do it. But this way, you know, all right, you got 15 minutes, you're going to play. Each team is guaranteed one possession. First team that, you know, has the ball, if they score, the other team gets their one possession to match it. But if they exceed it, they win. Hey, you score a touchdown, kick an extra point. The other team, let's say you're getting late in overtime, right? Let's say you got like 30 seconds left and you're down by the extra point. You could go for two if you need to win, right? You could go for two to win the game right there, and you know, at the end of the overtime. So, yeah, I think that's probably going to be the most popular. My guess is that they'll figure out a way to either utilize that one, that suggestion, or they'll just say, we're playing a full quarter, and if you don't, you know, have a winner after the one quarter, then the game is still going to stay tied. That, you know, it's kind of like, well, then what the hell do we just play 15 minutes for? Well, you've given teams at least a chance to do it. Because it's conceivable you could play that whole 15 minutes the same way, right? And nobody could score, just like we saw in the Philadelphia-Cincinnati game. It could happen. So you really don't lose anything, one way or the other. All right, good feedback on that one. Let's hear from you as we get ready for hour number two inside the playbook. Webradio@patriots.com. Webradio@patriots.com, the email address. A lot of things to chew on again today. Number one, your thoughts on overtime in the National Football League, and how would you change the rule? How would you change the rule to make it better? Do you agree with what we've already talked about, or would you do it differently? That's number one. Number two, what do you remember most about week three and the loss to Miami and Foxborough? What stands out in your mind is the first memory from that rather abysmal day. That's number two. And number three, are you pleased in a positive sense, or are you disappointed with this team at 6-4 after 11 weeks, given everything that has happened, especially the injuries? Is this team better off or worse off than you thought it would be? Webradio@patriots.com. Hour number two inside the playbook coming up.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call, and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
Well, we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation. Party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com. Patriot Place in Foxborough is the ultimate shopping, dining, and entertainment destination in New England. What's your Patriot Place experience?
We took the kids to a movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe and finally went to Red Robin. The burgers were amazing. It was so much fun. Everyone loved it.
We had girls' night out at Patriot Place last weekend. A little shopping, dinner at Davio's. It's just like the one in Boston. And we had drinks at the cutest little wine bar called Tastings.
Experience Patriot Place. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day.
Honestly, I'm here about once a week. I always find great deals at Christmas Tree Shop and Old Navy. And the shoes at Off-Broadway are unbelievable.
Patriot Place is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough with convenient and free parking.
Bass Pro Shop and Eastern Mountain Sports have everything I need for my camping and hiking trips. And we love CBS Scene Restaurant. They've got about a million TVs. And their outdoor deck looks right into Gillette Stadium. It's so cool.
Log on to patriot-place.com for more information. Patriot Place. Everyone wins. We know you have a busy day ahead of you, and mornings are always tough to get through. So stop by your local Dunkin' Donuts today and grab a freshly ground, freshly brewed Dunkin' Donuts coffee.
It's the perfect thing to get you going in the morning. Dunkin' Donuts coffee is made with real Arabica beans, which give it that rich flavor everybody loves. And while you're there, try the new egg white flatbread sandwich from the new DD Smart Menu. Choose from two delicious varieties, turkey sausage or veggie. Both served on multi-grain bread. With under 300 calories, you can now make a smarter choice for breakfast. So, stop into your local Dunkin' Donuts today and try one with a medium hot coffee for only $3.99. Price and participation may vary, plus applicable taxes. Limited time offer.
When you've got a lineman-sized hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mile and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Hour number two inside the playbook on Patriots.com radio. I'm John Rook. Web radio at Patriots.com is our email address. 508-543-7482 is our telephone number. And we're going over, of course, the Miami Dolphins and looking back a little bit at what has been certainly an eventful 2008 thus far for the Patriots. And we're also trying to, solve the ills of the NFL and how we would attack overtime, since there are apparently more than just a few players around this league that don't understand what the rules are. I mean, Eric Scalavino told us in the opening hour of the program today, in the Patriots locker room, asked a couple of choice guys, and frankly, they were unaware that the overtime rule is what it is. First team to score and you're done, or that it doesn't just keep going at the end of 15 minutes. It's only sudden death in the playoffs, where it just keeps going interminably. I realize it doesn't happen all that often. You never really get, because it's been 6 years since we had a tie in the NFL, but goodness, don't you consider that sort of a basic thing? So anyway, that's what we've been talking about in the opening hour of the program today amongst the items. And the other aspect to it all is the Patriots got spanked, just got thrashed by the Dolphins back in week three. It was stunning in its completeness. It was shocking because the Patriots were, frankly, not even in the game. I mean, it was just like, whoa, talk about a sucker punch to the solar plexus. That's what it was to the entire organization. And it pumped life at the same time into the Dolphins, where, as we've mentioned, they've won six of the last eight, starting with that week. And now they're dead even with the Patriots in the standings, a game behind the Jets in the AFC East. And if they beat the Patriots, they will have swept them. It'll be the 14th time that the Dolphins will have swept the Patriots in a single year. Patriots have only swept the Dolphins six times previously. So, the Dolphins, as we all know, those of us that go back a ways with this franchise, Dolphins have long been considered the thorn in the side of the Patriots. Whereas I think we all like to really believe that the Jets might be our most hated rival, certainly within the division. The Dolphins have really been the stickler. They're the ones that have dealt the most, I think, punishment to the Patriots over the years. And maybe we just sort of dismissed the Dolphins as a rival recently because the Dolphins have been down and almost out while the Patriots have just crushed them. But then again, that really hasn't necessarily, been the case. I mean, because when you go back, into recent history, honestly, this is the 87th time in history that these two teams will have faced off. 43rd year as division foes, right? Patriots have won 10 of the last 15 games overall against Miami. But The Dolphins have also won 32 of the previous 42 they have played all time in South Florida. 32 out of 42 overall in South Florida against the Patriots. We all know that playing in Miami has certainly been one of the worst places for the Patriots to try to get a win over the years. And that's probably still the case. But I think we also know that it has been less so in the last few years because the Dolphins have been down. And the Dolphins had a chance now to return the favor, which they did greatly back in Week 3. They snapped that 21-game regular season win streak. I don't know that that really means a lot to the players in the locker room. It may mean more to someone like you or I. But I feel fairly certain that somebody in that locker room is going to remember that, you know what, they really beat the you-know-what out of us, and we have something to prove here. We do have something to show. I just question whether or not the Patriots have the physicality to be able to show it because they're so banged up in so many facets of the game. And again, I'll get back to an original point that was made in the opening hour today. You know, the Dolphins are not as bad as they were, as the record indicated they were. They may not be as good as the record is now, but they're not as bad as they were a year ago. And they're probably closer to being good. So in that regard, I have to admit that this is, to me, this is a good old-fashioned AFC family feud coming up. And we should be kind of psyched up for this. And maybe we're I don't sense the emotion for this game that we even had going into the Jets game a week ago. Am I wrong about this? How do you feel as a fan? How do you feel about this game? Are you getting psyched up for it? Do you hate the Dolphins? Or did you wear a Squish the Fish t-shirt back in the 80s? I mean, how do you feel about this? Are you able to get up for this? Or is there just still something in you that says, you know, I'm just not convinced that this is do or die? You know, our earlier email, James from North Carolina, who sends in, you know, emails all the time. He said, you know what, I'm not convinced that this is a do or die game. That even if they lose this Sunday, the season's not over. They could go six. They could win six straight. They could go 11-5. They could still make the playoffs. Well, of course they could, but does anybody see what I see? Or am I just totally way off base here? Come on, guide me in. Let me know. Where am I? Where do I stand on this? Webradio@patriots.com. Our three questions of the day. All right, we've got Jim in Florida who wants to. Answer those particular issues today. He said, number one, he said, to answer your three questions first, I am impressed that the Patriots are 6-4 and still in the thick of the hunt for the AFC East crown or the wild card in spite of so many injuries and loss of marquee starters. To me, I'd have to say I think that that would probably be the overwhelming thought, that people are still impressed that they're 6-4. Although, like I've told you in the opening hour, my initial impression is that I'm disappointed with the fact they're 6-4 because I expected more out of the defense. No, I did not expect Tom Brady to go down. No, I didn't really expect as much as we've gotten out of Matt Castle. I didn't. But I also expected that this defense would be the part of the team that would carry the team and get them to 10 wins minimum. And get them into the playoffs one way or the other. That was my minimum expectation. That was my reevaluation of this team after Brady went down in Week 1. And if they lose this game, they're 6-5. They lose this game on Sunday to Miami, they're 6-5, and they've got a real struggle to get to 10-6. Can they do it? Sure. Will they do it? We don't know. But I'm still largely left with a disappointing feeling. What about you? Disappointment, or are you impressed with what they've done at this point in time, all things being considered here? Jim also says, my biggest surprise in the Week 3 loss to Miami is how poorly the Pats played. No swagger, no energy. They were just flat, and they seemed to lay down to a winless team at home, and Pennington seemed to complete every pass he attempted, and the Wildcat worked, it clicked consistently, and the offense played conservatively even after they fell way behind. Yeah, it was like that they didn't game plan properly. They had no clue how to come back in that game. Had that been a 20-13 game as opposed to 38-13, and they had had an opportunity late in the game maybe for a drive, I don't think anybody would have been confident they could have done it. Why? Because I don't think they game-planned enough for Matt Cassel and for this team to be able to drive down the field on Miami. This was when he was still, you know, kind of learning as we go, and there weren't any deep routes, and we were complaining about, you know, the fact that he wasn't throwing deep, and so they just hadn't given him, I think, the full playbook that he probably has now. I don't think they could have come back, even if they had been in position to come back. So there is a progression, certainly offensively. There's been a regression, I think, defensively, although it's pretty hard to regress from giving up 38 points. They played bad that day anyway. But, yeah, they were definitely flat. And that sort of is what I was talking about. My overall impression from week three is, God, they got beat 25 at home. How the hell did that happen? And he says, as for overtime, I'm a traditionalist in sports. I tend to hate to see rule changes in general, and sudden death overtime as it exists isn't perfect. But I don't like the idea of giving both teams a shot on offense, or even an extra overtime period isn't perfect either. Wind, home field, crowd could favor one team over the other as well, for example. Well, okay, traditionalist in sports, but I think, you know, I consider myself as old school as the next guy, Jim. But, you know, there is a such thing as, you know, being a fuddy-duddy, you know. I mean, you can be too old school. I think you have to realize that there are ways to improve an already pretty good sport. And there are ways to make rules better, not only for the entertainment value for you and I, but also for the players, to give them a better opportunity to win, number one, and maybe even to stay healthier and therefore to play longer. Stretch out their careers. Who knows? So I think we all realize that nobody likes the overtime rule in the NFL. Nobody really likes it. We just kind of deal with it because, well, to borrow the old phrase around here, it is what it is. They can make it better, and it wouldn't take much to make it better. I've given you two great examples today how to make the overtime better. I really think the competition committee needs to step up and take a look at this, especially in light of the fact there are a lot of guys in their own league don't even know what the hell's going on in overtime. They don't even know the rule. Now, that's just ridiculous. It tells me that because they don't even know the rule, that there's something wrong with the rule to begin with. Doesn't kind of logic dictate that to you? So, okay, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. Rule changes, yes. But, I mean, it was a rule change when they did away with ties anyway and decided to have an overtime in the regular season. So if you really want to get old school, wipe out overtime altogether. Let's keep the tie in the NFL and only use overtime in a playoff game where you play until somebody scores, like that classic Kansas City-Miami game back in the mid-70s. Or early 70s. Early 70s. 72, 73. A game that, you know, obviously went into double overtime. Longest game in NFL history. Actually, six quarters, right? Almost the seventh quarter, right around there. And again, I'm going off the top of my head, almost on remembrance here. In overtime, in the playoffs, you're going to play until somebody scores and wins. That's it. Because you can't have ties. But in the regular season, well, all right, you really want to be old school, then you play with ties because that's the way it used to be. If you're going to have an overtime, you need to give, I think, teams an opportunity to win it. You don't want a game decided by a mere flip of a coin, which is really what happened this last Thursday against the Jets. If you retool the overtime, then you give both teams a chance to win it or even lose it on the field, and you take the chance out of it. You take the mere coin flip aspect of it out of it. And yes, I do get the fact, well, you know, hey, if you're unlucky enough and you lose the coin flip, well, then your defense has to step up. And if you don't, then you deserve to lose. Okay. I don't necessarily disagree with that. That is a good point. But you don't play the previous 60 minutes like that. And I think that's really where I'm coming from, Jim. You don't play the previous 60 minutes like that. So if you don't play the previous 60 like that, why do you have to play the last 15 like that? If you're going to try to keep overtime as true to regulation as possible, then both teams must have the ball. Right? Anyway, good thoughts and great thought-provoking stuff again today. And he says, prediction on Sunday, absolute must win for the Patriots. And Jim in Florida says, Pats 27, Miami 17. All right, good stuff on that one. Excellent stuff on that one. Web radio at patriots.com. It is, of course, an opportunity for you to jump into the program and see if you can't contribute to one of our questions today. Obviously, we're trying to track down Dan Dierdorf from the opening hour of the program, and unfortunately, he has stayed unavailable to this point in time. So, frankly, I apologize for that. Usually, that doesn't happen, but every once in a while, signals get crossed, and you know, busy guys like Dan Dierdorf, you know, get busier. And so, hopefully, we'll try to track him down, if not before the end of the show for you today. For those of you that might have downloaded the podcast later in order to hear him. Sometimes it just works out this way, just as it does in the regular radio world. Sometimes guests, for whatever reason, can't appear. We will try to track him down for you for tomorrow's program. Of course, on Thursday, we regularly have Eric Scalavino from PFW and Russell Baxter from ESPN, the NFL research coordinator, who I know is a favorite of many of you, and he will be with us tomorrow because I exactly know how to track him down. I've got all of his numbers, but Russell's good about that anyway. So, and if we get a chance to add Dan into the mix tomorrow, then that's certainly what we will do. But in coming up in about 5 or 6 minutes, Harvey Green, who's the Senior Vice President in charge of media relations for the Miami Dolphins, and again, a frequent contributor inside the playbook during Miami game week, he will join us to give a little bit of the Miami perspective of things coming into this divisional battle with the Pats. So that part is coming up. And we also, again, hope to have the conference calls for you. They're just now wrapping them up at Gillette Stadium with members of the Patriots media. Ronnie Brown, Dolphins running back, Tony Sperano, Dolphins head coach. And we hope to have those for you before the end of this hour as well. All right. Web radio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482. That's the telephone number. All right, let's pause for the timeout here. We'll have Harvey Green coming up in just a couple of moments. Comments, calls perhaps coming up thereafter. Your emails continuing. Come on, let's go now. Web radio at patriots.com, all inside the playbook.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
But we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation. Party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com. Patriot Place in Foxborough is the ultimate shopping, dining, and entertainment destination in New England. What's your Patriot Place experience?
We took the kids to a movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe and finally went to Red Robin. The burgers were amazing. It was so much fun. Everyone loved it.
We had girls' night out at Patriot Place last weekend. A little shopping, dinner at Davio's. It's just like the one in Boston. And we had drinks at the cutest little wine bar called Tastings.
Experience Patriot Place. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day.
Honestly, I'm here about once a week. I always find great deals at Christmas Tree Shop and Old Navy. And the shoes at Off-Broadway are unbelievable.
Patriot Place is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough with convenient and free parking.
Bass Pro Shop and Eastern Mountain Sports have everything I need for my camping and hiking trips. And we love CBS Scene Restaurant. They've got about a million TVs. And their outdoor deck looks right into Gillette Stadium. It's so cool.
Log on to patriot-place.com for more information. Patriot Place. Everyone wins. We know you have a busy day ahead of you, and mornings are always tough to get through. So stop by your local Dunkin' Donuts today and grab a freshly ground, freshly brewed Dunkin' Donuts coffee. It's the perfect thing to get you going in the morning. Dunkin' Donuts coffee is made with real Arabica beans, which give it that rich flavor everybody loves. And while you're there,
Try the new egg white flatbread sandwich from the new DD Smart Menu. Choose from two delicious varieties, turkey sausage or veggie. Both served on multi-grain bread. With under 300 calories, you can now make a smarter choice for breakfast. So, stop into your local Dunkin' Donuts today and try one with a medium hot coffee for only $3.99. Price and participation may vary, plus applicable taxes. Limited time offer.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mile and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Food Master, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Back and slide the playbook for a Wednesday here on Patriots.com radio, and pleased to be joined by the Senior Vice President of Media Relations for the Miami Dolphins and a frequent contributor to the Patriots playbook, Harvey Green. Harvey, it's great to visit with you. Thanks for the time and an otherwise busy week, I know.
No, it is. It's a big game, but it's nice. It's been a while for us since we've had one like this, so it's enjoyable. A lot of attention focused on the game and on the team, and that's why you're in this business.
Absolutely, and that kind of leads me to the first question, Harvey, because I know with the Dolphins now at 6-4 and having won 6 of the last 8, and they had a resounding win back in Week 3 that we spent a lot of time obviously talking about over the last day or two. Fact is that the Dolphins are relevant again, and do you guys get the sense now that that's really more of a relief, or how does it feel to be relevant again, maybe even in your own marketplace?
Well, to be honest, the last couple of years have been an aberration. I've been here 20 years, and for the first 15, I never had a losing record with this team, so we were relevant locally. And we were relevant nationally. It was enjoyable because the games against the Patriots and the Jets and the Bills all meant a lot. You know, we would point to those games. I think fans of the opposing team pointed to our visits in each of those three cities. And the last couple of years, it kind of took the edge off of that when we were almost an afterthought here and in the AFC. So it's nice where people are talking about us. It's nice that people are looking at us with a sense of respect. Frankly, 1-15, it's good to put those memories behind us. And I think fans here certainly are excited not only about what we're doing now, but about the direction the team is headed. I think they have faith in people like Tony Sperano and Bill Parcells and Jeff Ireland. So they're excited about the present, but they're also excited about the future.
All right. Let's go back to that Week 3 for just a moment, much to the chagrin I know of some of the Patriots fans that are listening. But what stands out most in your mind? That's the question that I've asked Pats fans today. What stands out most about the Week 3?
I think the biggest thing for us is it gave us credibility within our own building. You know, we were coming off 1-15. We had a whole change of coaches here and a whole culture change. And, you know, trying to instill something, nobody knew that much about Tony. Nobody knew that much about some of the players that we brought in. And even Chad at that point was still an unknown quantity to us. Mm-hmm. And when you're 1-15 and then you start off 0-2, obviously people are starting to say, okay, do these people know what they're doing? Was getting Pennington the right thing? You know, what kind of play do we expect from Joey Porter? What about some of the rookies like Jake Long? And I think the win against the Patriots more than anything else gave us a sense as a team that, yes, in fact, we have turned the corner a little bit, that the people here do know what they're doing, that we brought in some quality people, we have some good leadership, and that, in fact, we are on the right track. And I think even Coach Sperano today said that really helped have everyone here buy into everything collectively, that we do know what we're doing and that we are headed in the right direction. I think if we had lost that game and dropped to 0-3, you know, there might have been some initial questions, but that put an end to it. Beating the Patriots gave us some instant credibility, and I think we're able to build off of that, and that really helped us come together as a team.
So certainly that game served as a catalyst for where you are now.
Yeah, and that's not to say it would not have happened the next game. I think we've played well enough in a lot of our games where we would have won most of the ones we did anyway. So I think we were headed in the right direction. But I think what that served to do is give us credibility a lot quicker. And, you know, the Patriots for the last 5 years have been the gold standard in the NFL. If you could measure up to them, even over 60 minutes, then you must be doing something right. And so when we were able to beat them on the road, I think we came back, and as Tony would say, why not us? You know, why aren't we the team that feels that we can win every game we play? I know every team in the league believes that, as they should, but I think here we're able to start to answer that question a little more positively and with a little more sense that, in fact, we knew what we were doing.
I can certainly pick out some of the reasons why I believe your team has certainly come to the forefront now and been a real contender in the AFC East. Ronnie Brown being healthy, Ricky Williams bouncing back to, you know, closer to his former self. Chad Pennington, as you've already sort of mentioned, coming in and giving you solid, if not spectacular, quarterback play. I also think that you've had guys in roles fulfill those roles. Greg Camarillo, maybe let's say in a possession type receiver role. Ted Ginn learning how to be a big play kind of guy. Defensively, Joey Porter stepping up and being a big play guy on the other end itself. You have guys now that are filling positions on the team that they needed to fulfill in order to be successful.
No question about it, and I think that's a real solid indication of why we have turned things around to an extent. You know, Joey Porter, for example, struggled last year on a 4-3. You know, we traded Jason Taylor, went to a 3-4, put Joey on the weak side, which is where he played at Pittsburgh, and all of a sudden he's flourished, in part because he's playing a position he's used to playing and one where he can take advantage of matchups that didn't exist for him a year ago. That allowed, for example, on a chain reaction, to have a guy like Matt Roth, who was a defensive lineman for us a year ago, now play on the strong side in that 3-4. Now he's excelled as well. So I think a lot of it, as you said, were players who were put in the right places and have been able to take advantage of not only their ability, but of the position that they're put in to be able to use the ability in the way that maybe they weren't a year ago. Obviously, on the offensive side, you know, Chad Pennington's a perfect example of that. You know, we know how good he can be, but I think he's made a player like Ted Ginn, who's only in his second year and is still learning how to play wide receiver, or a guy like Greg Camarillo. He's making them better players than they might have been in a different situation. So I think the reason we have played so well is we are getting the right people in the right place, and we're maximizing the abilities they have to contribute to whatever we're asking them to do.
Harvey Green is the Senior Vice President for Media Relations for the Miami Dolphins, visiting with us here inside the Patriots Playbook. Let me start, first of all, with Joey Porter. And are there days when you wish he just wouldn't say anything?
You know, Joey Porter reminds me of a guy I had here about 10 years ago. I know Patriots fans will remember well, and that's Brian Cox.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, there are days you wish that they would keep quiet, but that's who they are. That's what makes them such great players. You know, if Brian Cox wouldn't get people mad at him, I don't know that he would be as tough a player as he was on the field. And I'd say the same about Joey. These types of players thrive under that type of pressure, that they like going into somebody else's house and showing that they're the ones in charge. And that's really maybe what makes them as good as they are. So I at this point, when you're leading the AFC in sacks, I don't think you tell a player to change very much about what he's doing. Would I like him a little more subdued? Yeah, but not at the expense where it might cost him a couple of sacks. I think, you know, Joey is who he is. And the good thing is, last year, as you said, you know, he had a bark but no bite. You know, 1-15, you can't say very much. At least this year, he's able to back it up on the field. And the team, to an extent, has been able to play a lot better behind him.
You know, Heath Evans was quoted in our locker room yesterday, and I know it made a couple of the Florida newspapers, South Florida newspapers today, in fact, that, you know what? He doesn't mind Joey talking at all. Why? Because he's backing it up. That just backs up what you said. The fact is he's earned the right with the sacks that he's had, leading the AFC, and the performance of the team. He's earned the right to squawk a little bit, and it's actually the Patriots' job to force him to be quiet.
Yeah, you know, Joey was quiet last year. You know, we talked early, guaranteed a win, which we didn't get, and you know, admitted that it's tough to talk when you can't back it up. You know, but having said that, there are some guys on his team, like Chad, who don't say quite as much, who also have played at a high level. So I'm not necessarily sure that one is needed to have the other.
Sure. Who's been a surprise, in a positive sense, on that defensive side of the ball, in addition to what Porter has done, that maybe it wasn't quite expected of him, in your estimation?
I think one guy who has really stepped up his play this year has been Channing Crowder. You know, with Zach Thomas gone and with the change in our defensive scheme, Channing has kind of taken on a leadership role, and he's making all these tackles that you really don't see because they're not sacks. You know, Joey Porter stands out. He may have, you know, four tackles, and two may be sacks, and those two may be series changing and maybe potentially game changing. You don't see that in Channing, but at the end of the day, you look up and he's got 10 tackles, which is exactly what you would have with Zach. He wouldn't change a game, but he wouldn't make mistakes, and he would be the rock of your defense to let a guy like Jason kind of freelance and get a little bit more of the spotlight. I think you see the same this year with Joey playing that Jason Taylor role, you know, getting a lot more of that spotlight because of his sacks and somebody you always have to account for. But Channing really doing all the dirty work and at the end of the day being a guy who your defense has been centered around.
What has a guy like Jeremiah Bell meant to your secondary in terms of kind of keeping everybody together and being a force, really, in the defensive backfield?
You know, I think one way is looking at how much we missed him a year ago when he was hurt. You know, he comes back this year, has played well, made a game-saving play in a two-point conversion a week ago. He's a veteran back there. I think our defensive backfield collectively has surprised people. And it's the one area of the team where we really haven't had much of a changeover between, you know, Will Allen and Jeremiah, Hill, you know, Jason Allen coming back. You know, our top five guys, the guys who were here a year ago, and I think that they step up their play, maybe having a little more time together, maybe a little different type of defensive scheme. I think people looked at that as a potential Achilles heel, and it's turned now to be a pretty good strength.
Two names offensively I wanted to deal with, the first one being Ronnie Brown and the fact that he's healthy. He looks like the Ronnie Brown of old. Is he?
By the way, you got a lot longer than I thought without bringing up the word Wildcat, so I'm impressed.
Well, I was going to kind of dance around that,
Harvey. Now you're down to Ronnie Brown, I figured that it would have to come up. You know, Ronnie, as you might remember, had a great season last year before he got hurt. After,
sure,
I think, seven games, he had 500 yards, was having a Pro Bowl year, and an injury that he had, people talk about having a year and a half minimally to come back from. Well, in less than a year, Ronnie has shown the form that he did a year ago. He's been great for us, but the best thing about Ronnie, and I'd throw in Ricky as well, Ricky Williams, is that they have a great relationship with each other, and that's critical because in this league, you've got to win with two backs, and Ronnie doesn't have an ego. Ricky doesn't have an ego. Ronnie isn't saying, I need the ball 25 times. Ricky, who gained 1,800 yards one year in this league, isn't saying, hey, I want to be the starter. Mm-hmm. They both complement each other. They get along well together. They're friends on and off the field, and neither one is complaining when the other one is playing and playing well. In fact, they're supportive of each other. So having both players sharing that position and both worrying about the common goal of winning games, not personal statistics, has made a difference, really, that you might not have been able to do if you had two different types of players. You know, Ronnie was used to splitting the load with Cadillac at Auburn, so this isn't anything new to him, but Ricky really hasn't. So for Ricky to accept that and for Ronnie at this level, after he already had last year, to also understand that he's better in the role that we've assigned to him is really a testimony to the mental outlook that both those players have, putting winning ahead of any personal statistics.
Yeah, that is a great 1-2 punch. Got to admit that. The other player I wanted to ask about is Jake Long and how his progression has come along. To me, it seems to have gone along swimmingly well because anytime you don't talk about an offensive lineman, well, that probably tells you something right there.
I always kid Jake at the end of the game, there's nobody around his locker. And I said, Jake, that's good news because if there are people around your locker, they would probably ask you about a holding penalty or a sack
right.
you gave up.
Right.
So the fact that you were invisible over the course of the game is obviously a good sign. But actually, it's funny you brought Jake's name up because I don't watch the offensive line that much. I'm following the ball as I think most fans do.
Right.
And I asked our coach a couple of days ago, hey, I haven't seen Jake Long really. How's he been playing? And he said he's really been great. He's always been a good run protector. He was that way in Michigan, but he's learning a lot about pass, protecting the quarterback, and he's really learned how to use his feet, how to use leverage, and he's really come a long way. So I think we're very happy with what he's done. He's learned a lot in the time he's been in the league, and I think he's a guy that will just get better and better, and hopefully somebody we don't have to worry about as far as manning the left tackle spot for the next decade. But he's played to the level we hoped he would, and he's still working to get even better.
And how has Tony Sparano handled this run of success? And did it come, you know, matter-of-factly to him, or do you think he's genuinely surprised that it's happened apparently as quickly as it has?
Well, you know, I think everyone was surprised. Obviously, coming off of a 1-15 year, I think anyone externally would be kidding themselves if they felt we'd be 6-4 at this point. with the exception being our coaching staff and our players. As I said earlier, Tony's mantra has been three words that he's preached from day one, and that is, why not us? He said today in his press conference, you know, he and Jeff Ireland and Bill Parcells are impatient. They didn't come here to rebuild. They came here to win. Now, obviously, they knew the challenges in front of them, and nobody's kidding ourselves that we're where we want to be. We still know we have a long way to go, and we still need to get better. But I think everyone here expected us to play at a higher level than anyone outside the building did. As you said, why not us? And I think, you come into every game expecting to win, and I think for the most part we've played to the level that Coach Bruno has not only asked of the team but, frankly, has demanded of them, and I think they've responded in kind.
We do have the, I guess for lack of a better phrase here, the family feuding going on within the AFC East, with the Jets now up at the top and the Patriots and the Dolphins right behind.
Gotta love it.
And the Buffalo Bills are still not too far behind. Is that something you guys expected, that you could be a part of this soon? I mean, really, when it comes down to brass tacks.
Yeah, because, I mean, look, everyone knew that the Patriots were head and shoulders above the division a year ago. I mean, you know, we were struggling, and so were the Jets and the Bills. But I think if you look at the leadership that these three clubs have, that you don't expect any of these teams to be down for very long. You know, the Jets get Brett Favre. The Bills, we knew were going to get better. They were playing well at certain points last year, and it was a question of whether we could keep Arvin at a bargain. I think you've got a division which is as competitive as any in the NFL, and I think it's a testimony to the leadership and the coaching staffs of each of the four teams, and I think you're going to see this for a while. You know, we're a young team. The Bills certainly are a young team. The Patriots have always been outstanding, and the Jets are now finding their stride. So, you know, I could see this being a dogfight for any first through fourth place for the next few years, and that's what makes it fun. You know, I don't think that as a team, if you're ahead of everybody else, it's great, but I think the fans kind of enjoy every game in the AFC as being a blood feud, because every game is so meaningful for tiebreakers. You know, there's one game separating first from fourth. That's what's great about this league, is every game is so critical, you can't afford to have an off one.
Have the fans come back? Have they embraced all of this? Have they been, you know, just kind of waiting in the wings to say, show me, and actually get out on the field and do something? Do you feel like they're back now?
Yeah, I think our fans, the last couple of games, have really started to buy in. You know, obviously there was some skepticism, as to be expected when you had a year like we did last season. You know, but I think having some people, having Chad Pennington, having Joey Porter, having Bill Parcells, there are some people here that have a history of success in this league. And I think when they started to show that history is continuing here in Miami, then the fans are starting to buy in now. And in the last couple of weeks, we've seen a turnaround in the sense of how much talk there is, how much positive support we're getting, and how much our fans have started to think about the team. By the same token, you've got to be careful because, as Coach Bruno said today, they don't hand you out trophies for winning six games. And, you know, if you start buying into the hype or believing, eating the cheese, as we sit around here, and you start thinking you're better than you actually are, it's going to cause problems. So, you know, on one hand, it's great everyone is excited about what we're doing, but by the same token, frankly, we haven't accomplished anything yet. Six wins is still a long way to go from where we want to be.
And looking for number seven this weekend. Harvey, thanks again for the time. It's always appreciated.
Happy to talk to you guys, and looking forward to coming up, you guys coming down here on Sunday.
Absolutely. You got it, sir. Thank you.
Thanks.
Harvey Green, Senior Vice President of Media Relations for the Miami Dolphins, visiting with us here inside the playbook again, as he does usually on Dolphins Week, and we're glad that he could make a little time for us in his schedule during the course of the day. It is a big game. Let's make no bones about this. It's a big game. It's a big game also for Miami because, frankly, as we've sort of led into today, this game for them can legitimize them. This game means almost, not as much in my own personal opinion as it does for the Patriots, but it almost does because, as I said, it can stamp them as legitimate contenders, not only in the AFC East, but in the AFC period. And it gives them an opportunity potentially to compete with the Jets for the division title if they beat the Patriots. Now, Paul Perillo was talking about this during PFW in Progress earlier today. I caught the tail end of the conversation. You may have heard it, but he said, if the Dolphins win, does this really signify a turning of the power grid in the AFC East? I would agree with Paul to the extent that, no, I don't think it has, because would anybody think the Jets or the Dolphins might be where they are if Tom Brady were healthy? Now, granted, his being healthy doesn't affect whether they win or lose, but I think it's within reason to say if Brady were healthy, the Patriots probably don't lose that Jets game this past Thursday, and they probably, well, certainly let's just say it won't be 38-13 if he's a part of that game back on week three. Maybe the Dolphins win in an upset. They've done it before with Tom Brady as quarterback, so I guess it's conceivable they could have still done it, you know, in September of this year. Well, we give them the benefit of the doubt on that. If those are two, you know, games that turn out to be wins the other way around, well, then obviously the Jets aren't in first place and the Dolphins aren't tied with the Patriots right now. So it's hard to say that until maybe those two teams beat the Patriots with the Patriots sort of kind of, you know, at least close to full strength, it'd be hard to really say, hey, the balance of power has turned. But I believe that will be the story. If the Patriots lose this game on Sunday, that will be the story that will ring throughout the NFL. Ding dong, the witch is dead. Long live the new kings of the AFC East. Kids, that's why Sunday is so important to the Patriots. They need to hold on to not only A, the statistical mathematical edge, which they would still have if they win this game on Sunday, but they will also make sure that everyone, including their own divisional rivals, knows we may be beat up, but we're still the Patriots. It's message sending time. Of course, the big question is, do the Patriots have enough left in them to send that message to the Dolphins? All right, we will wrap up our show today by listening into the conference call with Dolphins head coach Tony Sparano, completed just a little while ago with members of the Patriots media at Gillette Stadium. So we'll let you hear the questions that they had to fire for the head coach of the Dolphins at 6-4 and certainly sitting in pretty good stead within the confines of the AFC East. Tomorrow's program, we'll probably get to Ronnie Brown's conference call from the Dolphins with Patriots media. We hope to hook up again with Dan Dierdorf. Apologize again for that today. And there will be... a Russell Baxter appearance tomorrow night. That I can 99.9% guarantee about. Russell will join us as he normally does on Thursdays.
And Eric Scalafino.
And he'll be there. We'll find him. We'll track him down. And Eric Scalafino will also report from practice as well tomorrow from for the PFW guys. All right, so let's wrap it up today with the head coach of the Miami Dolphins, Tony Sparano.
Can you talk about the difference between the last time you faced the Patriots, you're coming off an 0-2 start, and we saw how emotional you were to get that first win. How different is it now that you've stamped yourself as a contender here?
Well, I mean, I don't know that we've done anything like that. I just think that we're playing a little bit better right now. So, I mean, you know, one thing when you come in here as a new coach, and any coach, you know, that has done this for the first time will say the same thing. In order to validate what it is that you've done, you need to win some games. And, you know, that just happened to be the first time that we won a game. So it gave us a little bit of validation to the things that we were trying to get done here within our change of culture.
The Jets are on top of the division. In any way, do you still measure yourselves against the Patriots when it comes to this division?
Well, I sure do. I mean, I told our team the other day, I mean, in my mind, you know, our conference, you know, we still, in order to get to where you need to be, the conference runs through the Patriots. I understand where the Jets are, but, you know, till the end of the season comes, one way or the other, the conference runs through New England.
How much, I know this is an overused word, but confidence does your team have with four straight wins and the last two being very close?
Well, I mean, there's confidence, you know. I mean, you have to win games a bunch of different ways in this league, you know. I mean, certainly you need to try to beat, you know, you need to be able to beat some people that, you know, maybe you're expected to beat. You need to win some close games at some point, you know, and then you need to beat somebody that maybe you're not supposed to beat. So, you know, we've been able to do some of those things right now, so I think there's a little bit of confidence there, but certainly not cockiness, just, you know, confidence, I think, it comes with, you know, any team when they're having some success.
Who's, well, I guess everybody gets credit for the lack of turnovers you guys have had this year. Every coach wants to emphasize that. What's been the key to, you know, not turning the ball over for you?
Well, I think, you know, it's something certainly that we talk an awful lot about. You know, we try to work hard on it in practice. you know, and not turning the football over. I mean, you know, some people will say, well, how do you do those things? I mean, we just really work hard on ball security in all our positions, those type of things. You know, we're fortunate that the people that handle the ball for us, you know, Chad Pennington, and then, of course, our backs and, you know, any of those other people, our receivers, we're fortunate that that these guys have been, you know, pretty trustworthy as far as that goes right now.
Tony, Ronnie told us that one of the things that you did when you came in was tell the team that you weren't coming in to rebuild, that you wanted to win football games now. Is that kind of what you're referring to when you mentioned culture change, that you wanted to instill that mindset in the team?
Yes, no question about it. I mean, I think that, you know, coming in here in the situation that we came in, you know, I think the natural reaction was that you were going to, you know, maybe rebuild, and this thing was going to take some time, and you were going to try to do all those things. Well, you know I don't have the patience for that. I know Bill Parcells doesn't, Jeff Ireland doesn't. So, you know, from our end, you know, we wanted to come in here, and we wanted to, you know, to be able to compete, you know, and just give ourselves a chance to win games and see maybe where this thing goes, you know, and that's really what we've done. So, I mean, I made no bones about saying that the first time that I met the team, you know, that this is something that we wanted to do, and, you know, we were fortunate that we were able to win a couple games. I mean, you know, we have 6 wins right now, so they don't give you any trophies, and you didn't get anything accomplished with 6 wins.
Would it be fair to say that your defensive scheme is unleashing Joey Porter more than the previous regime's scheme did?
Yeah, I would say that. That's definitely fair to say. You know, just, I mean, Joey came into this league really as a 3-4 outside linebacker, and, you know, I mean, we were able to get him kind of as close as we could to his natural position when he was back, you know, in Pittsburgh. So, you know, this does help him do that and helps use some of his talents, you know, to the best of our ability. And that's important for us. I mean, you know, in our scheme, you know, not much different a whole lot than, you know, the Patriots or some of these 3-4 teams. If your outside linebackers can't get to the passer, then you don't really have a chance.
Tony, how much influence is Parcells having on a day-to-day basis? And what are some of the things just from you being around him that you've learned from him?
Well, I mean, his influence, you know, as far as, you know, anything that we do, you know, from a game plan or practice standpoint or any of those things, you know, there really isn't much there. Unless I have a question, I may go down and pick his brain, which is a nice, you know, to be able to have in this building. But, you know, other than that, as far as things that I've learned from him, I mean, the list is long. You know, he prepared me to be in this position, without a doubt, I think, but some of the greatest strengths that I've taken from him, I think, would be the game management part of this whole thing. You know, I mean, as a young coach, what I'm finding is, you know, finally the game is just starting to slow a little bit for me right now, you know, kind of like a quarterback, and I think, you know, he's helped me do that a little bit just from what he's taught me along the way from a game management standpoint.
I know it's only been a short time, Tony, but where's the biggest way that you've seen Coach Parcells' imprint on this organization?
Well, I mean, I think just, you know, from a personnel standpoint, that's probably the biggest way. You know, I mean, one of the things that we don't do here, and our players understand this, is we continuously turn the bottom of our roster. That's important for us. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, whenever we finish our season, we want to make sure that we end up finishing maybe with a better 53 than we even started with. So, you know, the continuous turning of the bottom of the roster, those type of things, you know, players coming in and players going out from personnel standpoint, both he and Jeff Ireland, I think that's the biggest imprint right now.
How much is Chad Pennington's accuracy, how much is your offense, what benefit does he get from that?
Oh, I mean, it's tremendous. I think that, you know, I mean, we're a young football team, particularly a young offense. So, you know, you find a quarterback that can give you a chance to run with the football a little bit like that. You know, his accuracy, the fact that, You know, we're up there in the league right now on first down and first and 10 yardage, those type of things. Just giving yourself the opportunity, you know, to play throw and catch, you know, in some situations to catch the ball and run with it. That's important. You know, I mean, if the ball is not thrown with good location and good accuracy, then I think you have a little bit of a problem. It's awful hard to play behind the chains in this league.
What is the fourth quarter last minute drive like? The one Pennington engineered last week or the one Castle engineered against the Jets? You know, how much cachet does that give a quarterback?
Oh, I think an awful lot. I mean, I really do, especially amongst, you know, his teammates. But I think that, you know, these guys going out there and doing what they're doing, you know, Chad, Castle, I mean, this is not by accident. You know, I mean, you get into those kind of situations and you see these guys taking the ball down the field in the fourth quarter, moving their team, giving their team a chance to win. It's not by accident. These guys put an awful lot of time into it. You know, those things are drilled over and over again, but more importantly, you know, it's their film study and understanding what's going on, you know, during those situations, I think, that probably separates them.